Okay, so I can start already. The title of my talk is this: large extra dimension and darkness from string theories. The darkness part is more of a state of mind than any result I have. So I have actually nothing that's really new to say about dark energy from what I've been doing recently. And I tried something. I talked with Weinberg last year, and I asked him, how is it that he came up with this paper of 1987 about the cosmological constant and the entropic principle. And because at that time, I remember he was doing string theory. He was working on string theory. So how is it that suddenly he wrote this paper on a completely different subject? And he told me that he was invited to give some lectures in Harvard and the cosmological constant, so he had to think something about to say in the lecture, so he came up with the paper. So I thought that I could do the same. When I was invited to come here, I said, well, maybe I have a chance I can do something. So I started working on something. And for some reason, that didn't work. So, so I don't know why. It worked for Weinberg, not for me. So anyway, so I'll tell you what the thing that I've been trying. And also, probably I have not that much new to say about the dark energy, but a little bit more concrete about dark matter, and I hope to have time at the end to say something about dark matter. And the motivation for what we have been working on actually in the last couple of years, and it's actually to fix the model that are in string theory. I know that we have a mixed audience, so I try to be as explicit as possible. So in string theory, we have built this model like fields, and I will be more explicit later. And that has been what I claim is the probably one of the most interesting things that have happened in the last few years within string theory, that we have now mechanisms to fix the model life. And I see it from the positive point of view, because most people see it from the negative point of view. They say, well, this fixing of the model life is the thing that has given rise to the landscape. And I think the landscape is one of those things that everybody loves to hate. And especially if you don't work on the landscape, so it's easy to laugh about it and then forget about it. But the landscape also has, this has also something very concrete, that for the first time we have been able to compute how the model layer stabilizes, and then we can start making contact with the low energy physics in principle from particular string models. And that, I think, is a big progress, and that is the kind of thing that it hasn't hit the people who are not working on the field, that there's progress being made, and the progress is that we can address this issue that during many years we thought it was very difficult or almost impossible to do it with a standard knowledge of string theory. that was one thing. That's more or less stabilization, but large volume. For large volume, we have two motivations. One is that we have, if we want to find the volume is one of these moduli, so we want to get the extra dimensions to fix it at the value where the volume is large. And one motivation is because one volume, we call it V, is because one where the volume is a good expansion parameter. And this allows us, if we have the volume relatively large as in string units, so you have if the volume is much larger than the string size, so then we can trust better the effectivity at low energies, because, for instance, all the counter-cyclic masses and so on are inversely proportional to the volume, and the bigger the volume, the heavier these particles are, and then you can have a good control on your effective theory. So that's something that is good. But for phenomenological reasons, we want large volume is because there are these proposals over the years. In particular, we can think that the string scale is related to the planet mass by by this relationship, where I said the volume is in units of the string scale. So this is the string scale, this is the Planck scale, we know this is large, and we can play with the size of the string scale by having a large volume, so you can have the string scale to be as small as possible, and this is something that Guy and collaborators exploited with this ADD proposal, and then you can have, for instance, that the string scale can be 1 dB. It would have a very large volume, and that would be very exciting for terminological reasons, for LHC terminology and so on. And we have heard in this meeting that after Cleaves and Swisher's talk, that we have this sled idea of trying to understand dark energy by the similar idea that you can have supersymmetric lattice for dimensions with a fundamental scale to be PEV. So that is a good motivation. So you can have a volume very, very, very large to get MS to be of 1 GeV, knowing that 1 M Planck is 10 to the 18 or 19 GeV. The other is that we can have an intermediate scale. This is something we proposed with Cliff and Luis Banyas like 8 years ago, but also with Karen Benackley. And is that the string scale can be 10 to the 11 or so GeV. And again, for that, we need a volume not as large as here, but still very, very large to get this hierarchy. And if the string scale is like that, it's good for supersymmetry breaking, because this is the scale where of gravity mediated supersymmetry breaking. And from here, we can get, for instance, the gravitational mass of order 1 keV, and we can have like a solution, say, of the hierarchy problem in that regard, that we can have generate the soft supersymmetry breaking scale. After, so you can have, for instance, the Garpino mass will be like M string square over M Planck, and it can be of order 1 keV. And then this is the scale that controls all the essential soft breaking terms at low energies. And it would be nice if this scale is like that, then essentially, if we manage to get a volume large enough to get this scale, then we get naturally the scale of supersymmetry breaking, and then that's another way of solving the hierarchy problem. And as a third motivation, still, even if you have the string scale to be the God scale, the 10 to the 16 or 17 GeV, you still need a relatively large volume, because the volume is the ratio of the square of the M Planck over M string. And so you need a volume, let's say, of 10 to the 4 in string units, so you need something large. So even the most conservative case, where we hope the string scale is 10 gods, we need a large volume to get something, a hierarchy between M God and M Planck. And this is good for grand unifier. If people think about the gauge coupling unifier at the high scale, also for inflation, this is a natural scale, and so on. Okay, so this is the motivation. So we would like to have a large volume coming out from string theory. And in the past, all these proposals were made on that assumption. So, well, it would be nice to have large volume, but we just postulate that the volume is large, and that's it. So what we have been doing the last couple of years is that we have been getting large volume from string compactification as a solution for minimizing the scalar potential of the moduli fields. And that is, I think that's one of the things I would like to emphasize today. Okay. So how to get notice that large means very large. Here a few thousand, here's 10 to the 14, and over there is 10 to the 30 in string units. So it's very, very large in string units. Of course, in centimeters, it would be 10 to the minus 12 or higher. Okay, so how to get large volume? And so this is the standard way of doing that for the issue of moduli physics in string theory is to start with type 2D string theory. And there are five different string theories for people who are not in the field. And we picked this one because it's the one that we understand the best for this matter. But there's nothing special about this one. You can do this with the same with all the other ones. And in that case, in this string theory with the massless sector in 10 dimensions, is as follows. You have a metric, you have two anti-symmetric tensors of rank 2 and then one of anti-symmetric tensor of rank 4, two scalars and fermions. Gravitino and fermions. And these two scalars, one is a scalar, the other one is a pseudoscalar, so they make a complex object that we call the Dilaton S. So we start with this. And when compactified, we give expectation values to the different fields. I think that's correct, right? Okay, so you give expectation value to the fields in the extra dimensions and see what you get. And so the background of these bosonic fields values, you have a GMN, BMN and so on. And that will give you a compactification where now little m and little n are the extra dimensions. So and then see if they take values so that we get what we want, and what we want is a lower energy effective theory with at least one supersymmetry to have control on it. And to be also to have the chance to be realistic, to be chiral, and this restricts the metric to give the extra dimensions to be Calabi-Yau manifold, that just particular manifold, and then these fields can take different values, and they can have fluxes on this Calabi-Yau, so the Calabi-Yau will be a complicated manifold with a complicated topology, and you will have here, this is 6 dimensions. You have a 4-dimensional cycle. Like in total, you have one-dimensional cycles. You have 4-dimensional cycles, but you can have also some 3-dimensional cycles. And on these cycles, you can have, especially on these 3-dimensional cycles, you can have fluxes of the field strength of these two fields because they will carry 3 indices, so they can have flux on a 3 manifold, different from 0. So you can have the integral of FMNP over the 3 cycle, essentially given by integers, and the same thing with the integral of HMNP, another integer where H and F, H is the V and F is the A. And these integers are the different fluxes you can have. And they label, they are the source of the landscape. They have so many integers, so all this combination of integers give you a different solution. And that's why you have 10 to the 500 solutions. This is taking care of the three-dimensional cycles. There are no 1 cycles in the Calabi-Yau, and there are no 5 cycles. There are 2 cycles, which are dual to the 4 cycles. If you have a 4 cycle here, the perpendicular thing will be a 2 cycle. So you control by just counting the number of 4D cycles, you have counted on the number of 2D cycles. So these are the independent parameters. This is the number of 4D cycles is called H11, and the number of 3D cycles is called H12. And then a calorific Calabi-Yau has many values of H11 and H12. H11 has to always be greater than 1 because at least 1 has to give you the overall volume. The volume essentially comes from this. On this field. So that's the picture. And also these anti-symmetric tensors play a role. This one is also plays a role in the compactification because actually the compactification is not only just a Calabi-Yau, a normal Calabi-Yau, but it's a warped Calabi-Yau. So it's conformal, it's a manifold which is conformal equivalent to the Calabi-Yau. And the warping is related to the value of this field here. And so at the end, what we have is that you can have many Calabi-Yaus, so the number of these manifolds is maybe infinite, but this is known to be, people know, a few hundred million at the moment. And then the number, the big degenerates, as I told you, comes from the cycles you can turn. But also, on top of that, you can have brains, because the brains coupled to this anti-symmetric tensors. And so on wrapping this four cycles, you can have these seven brains. So it's a seven-dimensional object. Three spatial dimensions will fill out our space, and the extra four dimensions will be wrapping this four cycle. And then you can have, in particular points here, you can have D3 brains. And that's it. You cannot have D2 or D4 or yes, because they will break supersymmetry. And you can have D5 or D9, but they are dual to this. So essentially, this is all the game. So these are all the ingredients we have to play. So fluxes, brains in different locations, and the choice of the metric gives you the calorie output. Okay. So this is what people have been playing in the last few years, and the progress has been made, especially from this side, because for some reasons, people have set all these numbers to zero originally in the first 15 years of string theory, with some exceptions. And so it so happened that by turning on these fluxes, you make progress, because the progress, since you're iterating here over the size of this three-dimensional cycle, you fix the value of those three cycles. And that's one of the modules. So you fix the values of all these moduli fields. So the moduli means sizes of all the cycles. And so by turning this, you fix the values of all the three cycles. And then you are left with fixing the values of the four cycles. And to fix the value of the four cycles, we know that in these seven brains, we can have a gauge theory. And the gauge problem here, is proportional, so it's 1 over g squared is proportional to tau, where tau is the size of the cycle. So then at the end, so at the end of the day, we have an effective field theory, and so we have a four-dimensional effective field theory. With n equals to 1 supersymmetry. And this one will be determined by a superpotential and a carrier potential. The carrier potential we have a W0, which is come from the fluxes, plus the piece which is this comes from the number two of the effects on this seven brains field theory. So the fluxes, this one, that means that this is depends on the moduli. The moduli, I label them, well, now I cannot go that high, but this is a function of U and S, UA and S, and carrier potential will be a carrier potential for U and S that I won't write because it's relevant for what I'm going to say, minus 2 log of the volume. And this is the tree level carrier potential plus the perturbative correction to the carrier potential, because the carrier potential is renormalized order by order in perturbation theory by both alpha prime corrections in string theory and string group corrections. Whereas the superpotential we know is only number two between renormalized, so this is why this has number two part. There will be a number two between part of the carrier potential, but that is supplied. And the volume here is a function, is a cubic function from the t's, and the t's are the size of the two cycles that I told you, but the tau's that I'm writing here is just the derivative of the volume with respect to the t's. So, and the question, these numbers are called intersection numbers, and that people can compute them for a given Calabi-Yau, and that makes the difference between what kind of a quantification you have. Okay, So at the end of the day, we have the field. This will give you a scalar potential. V as a function of U, A, S, and the tau i's, where so A goes from 1 to H1, 2, and I goes from 1 to H1, 1. And let's say H1, 1 and H1, 2 are the numbers, and that is the Poisson number that I defined before. So that this then what this will do is this fixes the values of U, S, and T. So that's the progress that's been made in the last few years, and several people have contributed on that, particularly the work of KKLT. So our contribution, question? No. Our contribution came up because to fix the value of the fields, we have to have a non-trivial cancellation between this and this term. So this is once you have fixed this is a constant, and this is a negative. And then this has to compensate with that to give you a non-trivial minimum. And that means that you have to tune this WCU to very, very small values, or 10 to minus 11, or 10 to minus 15, so that you can find a size of t, which is has to be larger than 1. It's bigger than the spin speed, it's okay. So there was a big tuning in the original work of KKLT. And the reason they were doing that is because they had neglected this perturbative correlation to the scalar potential. So what we did is just generalize what they had in the sense that we had as many moduli as we wanted, but also including the perturbative corrections to the scalar potential that are dominant over the non-perturbative corrections to the superpotential. And that allows us to have WCU of order 1 or 10, which is the natural value, and you don't have to do any fine tuning. And by doing that, it so happens that you get large volume. And let me just give you the taste of this. So the potential will look like this. It will be V U or S W squared over the volume squared plus e to the minus, I will tell you what the meaning S here is. For this, as a working example, I take the simple scale, which is a case with two moduli, for which the volume is tau big to the 3 halves minus tau small to the 3 halves. So S means small there. And then I'm not writing tau big here because I'm substituting, instead of tau big, I'm putting the volume. So I'm just working with two variables, volume and tau S. And yes, I have simplified things in the sense that I'm writing only the real part of this fields. There's a phase also coming there, an imaginary part, and that you can minimize, and that's the origin of this minus sign. And so the important thing from here is that the minimum is very easy to find. The minimum is that you have to satisfy this du s w equal to 0, because this term has the lowest power of volume compared to the other perturbative ones, and it has no non-perturbative part of this. So then they want to be 0 by themselves. It's positive definite and 0. And then you're left with minimizing this part. And here, it comes the difference between what we had and, for instance, KKLT had. They didn't have this term. This is coming from the perturbative correction to the scalar potential, the alpha prime corrections in particular. And so if you have W0 to be very, very, very small, you can neglect this term compared to these two. And then you find into these two that W0 has to be a order of exponential, both of them to give you something on 0, and that's why W0 was small. In our case, we have now this extra term, and we can have W0 of order 1, or 10 or so. But then you can see immediately that you can see there's the minimum where the volume is of order e to the AS tau S times W0, because for that case, all these three terms are of the same order. So then when you minimize, you get minimums. And this is, and it so happens also that tau S is I didn't write about it, when you just remind it, it will be a constant divided by the string scale. So this is a number bigger than 1, so for 10 or 20, because the string scale, we want it to be small, but not ridiculously small. And so tau S is big, but then the volume is exponentially big if W0 is for 1. So that's the main result we had a couple of years ago. And this is the work I did actually with Vijay Balasubramanian. Very Beckman and Joe. And then after that, we have been writing several papers with Joe and my other students. And what I will report today originally will be based on published work with him and my other student, Michele Cipoli. So I hope this paper will appear in the next couple of weeks, and it will take a little bit longer. So that's the idea of the result, and that's it. So the only thing you have to play is what are the values of these constants, and to get different exponentially large volumes, and these constants. So we can have example. So A is something like a 2 pi over GSN, and for GSN of order 1, we get we have to get the volume of order 10 to the 30, if I remember. And this implies the n string scale to be 1 PeV. And if it's of order 20, then we have the string scale to be 10 to the 4, and then you have the volume 10 to the 4, so the string scale will be n god. And sorry, without the GSN, just the N. So. And for GS of order 1 over 10 or so. So this is achieving what I told you we would have liked to have, just to have, by just having this numbers tuned. And what is this N? N is the number of selling brains that are wrapping that those four cycles. So as I told you, I consider all the possible things that I can turn on. And by doing that, I have this freedom. And the freedom is to choose how many distant brains I can have. And by playing with the number of brains and the value of GS, which has been fixed by fixing the Villaton, because the GS is nothing else but the value of the inverse of the Villaton field. So that allows me to get volumes as large as I want. And then I can have the string scale to be as small as I want. OK, so we have been exploring this scenario.
So you have this rough, these 7 brains.
Yes.
And then there must be a U1 field, one combination of U1 field.
Yes.
Which you register in Balkan, right?
Yes.
So what happens with that?
That's just fixed at the end. Yes. No, there's an issue. Just to tell everybody, we had this discussion in a couple. And I promise you, I was going to write a paper on it,
okay.
And I did. So the paper is in January, came out in January, and you are in the acknowledgments. So. So the idea there was, that's interesting. I think I have been hiding something here from you, which is important. Something I've been hiding is that when you do all this, I didn't tell you of the value of the vacuum energy, and it's negative. So you get an anti-de-Sitter, non-supersymmetric model. So you need something to lift it, and that's what KKLT came up with, several ideas of lifting it. Well, they came up with one, and several of us came up with something different. You put at some point in one of these regions of the Calabi-Yau, you put anti-D3 brains, and they give you positive contribution to the potential energy. That's basically brain supersymmetry. A more elegant way to do it is something we proposed with Cliff and Renata and Kalosh, is to assume that you have D terms in the scalar potential. Sorry. All this came from F terms. And the D terms precisely are generated because of the existence of U1. So you can have a U1 in one of these B7, and they induce D terms, and then that's positive contribution to the potential energy, and that can work as a lifting. But we lack concrete examples, and then in this paper we have concrete examples. So I'm happy to
discuss Effectively,
they also have a difference.
They just don't follow the
difference. It is the decoherent algorithm. It's the same behavior. But that is like the Fayette plus piece.
Exactly.
You think that you have to carry, that you have to have extra fields charge on that you want, and that increase can cancel the beta. And the time will be zero, and that is actually what happens usually in KKLD scenario. Usually, constant D terms and F terms come together. In our case, it is not the case because our minimum is already non-supersymmetric, so both F terms and D terms will be different from zero. And then you can have these extra effects either to help you the lifting or not, depending on the model. So that's a model dependent.
Right. My question to the point is that you have this. One modulus which shifts under the U1, and that one modulus cannot appear in the superpotential with a constant coefficient. So that cannot be among these exponentials, right?
Exactly. So you're saying, if I have this guy is shifted, so then you have a field here, mass.
Then you have to make sure that gets started.
Exactly. That's what we did in that bit, and that's our
problem. So you have to go back and start it.
Yeah, exactly. So you fix this guy, and then go back and you are reduced to this case, and everything works. I don't remember the number. It was in January this year.
Okay. It's not finished yet.
Yeah. I remember you were tough last time because I told you that as I'm writing the paper. Then the next day, I think Dick Bond was giving a talk in the same, and you also asked the same question.
Yeah,
and then I told you, well, I told you last night that we're yeah, but the paper hasn't come out yet. So now the paper is out. So okay. Anyway. No, it's a good question, I think, because it does the two things. It could be dangerous, because it could ruin this thing, but it could be helpful, as we propose the clip, because it can help you the lifting. So, and that happens to be a model dependent state, as it says the problem. Good.
Fernando?
Yes?
Can you the perturbative corrections that you're considering are alpha time correct?
Very good, yes.
So what happens to the G-train correction?
Beautiful question, yes. So, I didn't specify here what this KP is, but in principle, the result that I have here comes from the KP of order 1 over the volume, and this is the constant here is this constant, and this has been computed to be, from alpha prime corrections. So then there are in principle a stream of corrections to this, and they could be dangerous. And there was a paper, actually, a couple of years or so ago from Baird and Hack, and they computed the problem with we didn't consider them because at that time nobody knew it. You knew what they were from the scalars. They computed for toroidal oriented folds. And they the question is to see how they compete with this one. It so happened to be something which at that time we thought it was kind of miraculous, is that the extra correction, this is the alpha prime correction. And then you have something that now you can write like this. This is a spring loop correction. And then you say, well, the power of the volume is the same. And here you have a root of tau that could be large. So this could be bigger than that one. And that then you can change the result that you get from here. It so happens that when you plug this in the scalar potential, you get zero. And then is the next order contributions that give you something non-zero, and they are subleading over this. So in that sense, and that was a paper 2 years ago for the toroidal oriented field. They wrote another paper a month and a half ago, generalizing this to Calabi-Yarros, and this is the term they come. And the cancellation happens again. Okay. So that's a very good question. That was something that you could see who will win, and so, but at the end, yes, it so happens that this was kind of made. Okay, what is the physics that we can explore? We can go back to the cases that I was describing at the beginning of my talk, the TeV scale, the intermediate scale, and the God scale. And we have concentrated mostly on this case, because it has, we think that the richest physics, but I'll let me tell you something about the other two cases. So let's consider the string scale to be one TeV. For that, the gravitational mass is 10 to the minus 3 electron volts. And you say, well, the splitting of the multiples will be very, very small, unless you put the standard model on an anti-D3 ring that breaks superstructure at the spin scale. So in that sense, that's similar to the sled scenario that Cliff and Susha were talking, that this splitting of the multiples, this splitting supersymmetry is only in the bulk, but not on the brain. And so you can try to make models where this is the case, and they happen not to be very nice, at least for us. We can have, for instance, the mass of this tau large. It's not something like 10 to the minus 26 GeV, which is it's hard to make realistic. And what else? Yes, and when we try to build models on the standard model on say on D3 brains or so, then it so happens that the soft breaking terms were not very realistic, in the sense that you get soft terms. I mean the scalar masses and Gugino masses in the standard model. So the partners of the standard model particles, they are such that the scalar masses, I mean the squares and so on, will be very heavy. And the Gugino masses very small. So you want the Gugino mass to be over GeV, then this has to be over 10 to the 12 GeV or so, and then you will get something like what people call split supersymmetry, where bosons and scalars are very heavy and the Gugino's are very light. But then with that, you don't solve the hierarchy problem because you have to keep the hierarchy problem. You want to keep the peaks light. So it didn't happen in this case. But I mean, it's a possibility. People use this in the landscape.
Here, the supersymmetry is breaking because of anti brain or because of some constants?
Both.
And how do you know that soft terms are capturing the supersymmetry breaking at the anti brain?
Good question, let me see. I think this is when you have the I made a mistake. Thank you for telling me. This happened for a string scale for the God scale. This thing, sorry, wrong. We get this for the string scale. Thank you for telling me. I was saying something wrong. So I'm sorry about that. Yes, thank you. You're always tough, please. So, yes, in this case, no, it's not the different vein, then everything is for the TV scale. Yes. So, sorry about that. Okay. Well, and you're my friend, so friends like that. Okay. No, just thank you for it. Yes, it was a mistake. Okay, so let me just give you an aside, but this is the thing that didn't work that I thought I was going to report here. And you have here, I can get a TV scale, but I would like to get something like the sled or the six-dimensional LED scenario, that you get 2 dimensions large and 4 dimensions not that large, because here I'm getting all the 6 dimensions very large. So the question is, can I get 2 of them very large and the other ones not? And I thought I had a way to do it. And the way to do it is, can we get only large 2 dimensions? And the way to do it is that you want, remember when I wrote the volume over here, p's are the sizes of 2 cycles, it's 2-dimensional objects, and tau is the size of 4 cycles. And so we want ti, p say t1, very large, but the corresponding tau of 4 cycles small. And for that I can design the expression of the volume to be, for instance, which is only linear from t1, so t2 squared plus t2 cubed, etc., all the terms, but it's only linear on t1, such that tau1, which is the derivative of the volume with respect to t1, gives me only t2 squared plus dot, dot, dot. It doesn't depend on t1. So that means that I can have t1 very, very large, get the volume large, but then tau1 will not be large because it will not depend on t1. Is that clear? Anyway. So, and this will correspond to the volume in terms of the tau's of this form. This what happens when we do that. It happens to be a counterexample to the large volume, because we do not get large volume. Which is unfortunate. And actually, that are just to revise when is it that we get large volume and when is it that we do not get large volume. And essentially, there are three types of moduli. And the ones that I have there, which in the example that I was writing for you, is called here. Because there has to be always minus signs here, that's the property of the Calabi-Yau's. These are blowing up modes. This is a particular kind of moduli that you can set to zero and nothing happens to the manifold. And when you have them, you have large volume. When you don't have them, you don't have large volume. So the condition for having large volume is to have blowing up modes. So then we can have here, we can add a blowing up mode. And then, three, sorry, another one. Remember that the number of thousands is big, it's 400, so we can play with them. And so once we have this, three halves. Once we have this, we can have large volume, but both tau 2 and tau 1 are large. Not only one. And then, again, I cannot get this large two dimensions, so this doesn't work. So in this case, we do get large volume, but both are large, tau 1 and tau 2. So at the end of the day, in generic Calabi-Yau, we have many large and many small moduli. Okay. So not only the volume is exponentially large, but all combinations are also large. And the blowing of modes, they are the ones that happen to be small. So that's the general result. So that's what I hope I was going to report here, because it would have been nice to reproduce the sled scenario from this approach. And so again, Cliff say, well, it's not too bad for a string theory. Okay. So that was the space case. The second case, the string scale equals to n-god, we got something last year and a half ago. We got inflation in a paper with Joe Conlon also. And the reason to get inflation is very easy. Look at this potential here. Forget about this part because this has been fixed. Look at the potential here, and the dependence on the tau s is just exponential. So you can see there is a term that doesn't depend on tau s. And this one, for large tau s, this one dominates over that. So you can neglect this. So this is this has the right shape for inflation. Like that. And then at some point when tau gets smaller, this becomes also important and compensate over that and give you a minimum. So at the end, that you get something like that. And then this direction is very flat because of the exponential dependence, and you get, without fine tuning, the slow roll inflation. I think it's the only case I know actually where you can get slow roll with no fine tuning in string theory. But I'm not ready to set it very strongly this, because here when I get something very flat, there you have to worry about extra correlations to the theta potential to see if they don't ruin the flatness, and that would not happen under control. So that's something that we still have to check. In the Norwich conditions, this remains flat under the correction. But I think it's nice to do that. And that is, I wanted to mention, because since this is supposed to be dark energy, I had my first motivation for dark energy, didn't work. This is also dark energy. Cliff likes to call it the mother of all dark energy, is inflation. So at least it has something to do with the conference that this is you're getting dark energy from string theory, but at the early universe. I have to mention that Dick Bohm and Lev Kaufman and collaborators have been generalizing this model, and they call roulette inflation, because they consider the other dimension, the axiom part, and they have more trajectories which are flat, and they call it roulette inflation. Okay, so let me go through the one that I really have been spending all my time, and intermediate. Okay, for this, the scales are the gravitational mass is n Planck divided by the volume. I have told you the string scale is n Planck divided by the square root of the volume, so that's the hierarchy. The Kaluza-Klein scale is n Planck over volume to the 2/3. Once you go to the Einstein frame, and And then, but interesting enough, is that N, the soft turns, and this I'm talking about V7 brains now. If you remember the mistake, I can put the standard model on V7 brains or V3 brains. The V3 brains, now you can read the negative thing that I say there, that then you get something like split supersymmetry and doesn't work. And so the nice thing you get is that you get in V7 brains, all the soft turns are suppressed, and they are of order the Galtino mass divided by the small volume, the small modulus size, essentially. So then, and so this is of order n Galtino, and this is log of m Planck over n three halves. So this is an extra suppression. It's usually the soft terms are of order n three halves. Here is n three halves divided by this log factor, which is a factor of order 20 or 30. It's smaller than the Galtino mass. So you want the Galtino mass to be, say, the order 20 TeV. And then all the scalar masses and Galtino masses so become over 1 TeV. So that is nice, and that we have been studying, say, how the soft breaking terms come out, to get the universality and spectrum with low energies, how to test it at LHC and so on. But it's not the purpose of this talk, so I will just not mention more. But just to tell you that this is the main motivation to get the 10 to 11 GeV. Also, when we originally wrote the proposal of 10 to 11 GeV with Cliff and Luis Ibáñez, this scale also works well for the axion scale and also for neutrino masses. And that precisely John Coleman has been studying this too, one with collaboration with Daniel Chamades. And they come out in these models to be at the right window. Remember, the axion window is 10 to 10, 10 to 12 GeV, and that fits very well with this scale. And the neutrino masses, when you get the famous LLHH term, you get the right order of magnitude. So that is also good. So there's also supersymmetry phenomenology, and axion and neutrino masses come out very well with this scale. But there is, so you can say, well, we have been trying to play with this and see how much we can differentiate with standard. All the previous discussions of supergravity models breaking of supersymmetry, and it's very difficult to actually test it at LHC compared to any other supergravity models, because this is a particular case of the general supergravity model, so you have to see how to make this different from any other ones. And we have found some, like for example, the Galtino masses are different in our case than in the most studied supergravity models and so on, but to reconstruct the events and to see that you actually get something that can be explained by our models and not others is much more difficult. And so what we have been moving now is to see what is that is generic from this approach. And the thing that is generic is the moduli. And the moduli have masses. First of all, the tau big, the ground corresponding of the volume, the mass is one of m Planck divided by volume to the three halves. In this case, it happens to be 1 MeV. The tau small, all the small ones, the mass is bigger than the Galtino mass by this same log factor. So now it's m Galtino times the log instead of divided by the log, so it's bigger than the Galtino mass. So this one is of order 1,000 TeV. So these are heavier. And then we computed how these objects couple to the standard model, say, to electrons and photons, and see what kind of implications they have. To do that, it takes some work, because these fields are the ones that you get from supergravity, but then you have to canonically normalize to see what are the real physical fields, and you have to find the linear combination of them. And so that's what we have done, and let me just write it for you, just to give you an idea of what the fields are.
So maybe you mentioned, so this axion is model independent axion, the one that comes out by convenient view, or
no, there are many axions.
Yeah.
Every tau field comes with this axion.
Yeah.
And so that's a good question, because here, if you fix this modulus, the corresponding axion, m axion big, the partner of that, the mass of this is like something like 10 to the minus 10 to the something GeV. something like that. It's extremely small. It's essentially massless. Whereas this one's, the axion is of order of a TV. It's also fixed. Okay. So then you would say, oh, this is perfect candidate for an axion because this is essentially massless. And then by QCD effects, you will get a mass, and then that will solve the strong-CP problem. Unfortunately, we cannot do it because in these models, the volume is so large, and the coupling, the gauge coupling, is inversely proportional to the volume. So we will have the gauge coupling of order 10 to the minus 10 or something, which is not realistic. So we cannot put the standard model in this cycle. So we have to put it in one of those cycles. So then you have what Joe did in this paper is to consider model with several moduli, where you fix combination of the moduli, but then leave one of the axion parts without being fixed, and which is not the dark one. And that happens. That, but you need at least three moduli to get it. And then that can be your axion. Yeah.
So, Fernando, this lower band.
Yeah.
So somehow it happens, you're saying it happens that the mediation of supersymmetry breaking to this moduli is stronger than to the original. That's what comes out?
Yes. No, it's the same. Just the couplings, because remember, everything depends on the volume and depends on this ratio. And there are some cancellations because there's a no-scale structure under here, so there's some thing that you expect to be non-zero. They have to cancel, and then the leading order becomes like this. It's very non-trivial. The Gugino masses you can see easily because the Gugino masses are just the Fs divided by F. But the for scalar masses, we were surprised to get it. So actually, in the first paper, we missed the cancellation for scalar masses. And we have to do it in the second paper.
These are moduli, right? Or these are something else?
These ones are moduli, yeah.
The ones that have a gravitational, right? I mean, with the
gravitational strength. No, that's a very good question.
Okay, okay.
That's a very good question. Yes. This one couples with the gravitational strength.
Okay, please.
This one, yes, but this one, not.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going right now.
So can I ask you a question based on that? So why does this not spoil Big Bang nuclear synthesis? If you have an MEV modulus that couples gravitational.
Yes, that's the next 5 minutes of my talk. Yes. So, just to give you an idea, when you look for canonical normalized fields, so you can write the tau s and tau small as linear combinations of two fields which are the canonical normalized. So you get something like this. So I have now the fields phi and chi. This is the heavy one. And this is the lighter. And so both are linear combinations of the original big and small that I have. But the powers of the volume are very, very, very different. So for instance, you can see this one, tau b is mostly chi, and tau s is mostly phi. But it has a small contamination from the other field, and that allows you to have couplings of chi to the fields that wrap this cycle. Chi to the fields that wrap this cycle. That will be this. The standard model will be wrapping this cycle. And they still couple to chi, although it will be very much suppressed. Okay. And so, as Gia was saying, we have to see how they couple and the couplings to matter. And matter, essentially, we consider mostly the closing minus and photons. And the chi, coupling to gamma, goes like 1 over n Planck, log of n Planck over n 3 halves. And the coupling to e closing minus goes like 1 over n Planck. Whereas the coupling of phi to gamma goes like 1 over n string. And it's more or less the same coupling of phi to e plus minus. So you can see that this field couples not with the gravitational strength, but with the string suppression. So this field phi has a lifetime very, very short. So the lifetime of this field is 10 to the minus 7 seconds or 10 to the minus 17 seconds. So this field is safe. So in the case, early in the history of the universe, then we have no problem with it. Whereas this field has a lifetime of 10 to the 24 or 10 to the 26, depending on which decay is, seconds. And so this lives longer than the universe. So then we have to see why is it that this doesn't cause a problem. And the problem is what people call the cosmological model of problem. The cosmological model of problem, it has been something that has been with us for many years in the 20th century. And this generic thing, all the moduli are supposed to have this problem. What is new for us, being this particular model, is that this moduli don't have it, because actually they decay very fast. But this one, the volume one, the unique, it still has it, and has a mass of one MeV. So we need something to dilute them, because they either they will overclose the universe, or if they decay so late that they will ruin nucleosynthesis. So that's what the question was. So we need to solve the cosmological moduli problem. I was very pleased to see, because I worked on this 12 years ago and stopped thinking about it. And in the meantime, now that I came back, I read that there's something that I find like a very interesting possible solution. And that solution is called thermal inflation. I have been mentioning to people here, and people confuse it with warm inflation, which is not. So thermal inflation is something that was proposed by Light and Stewart a few years, like 8 years ago. And that actually is a very natural period of inflation where you have a field that has a wave bigger than the mass. And so then you have, I don't have that much time, so I just like quickly I will tell you that the field has a potential like this, where this is sigma is much bigger than the mass of sigma. And so when you have finite temperature, you can have a potential here induced by you can travel in the false vacuum, and when the temperature reduces, you can flow. And that will give you the number of e-folds. It will be inflating because you are trapped here for a while. And the number of e-folds is proportional to the log of the wave of sigma over the mass of sigma. Sigma is the field. And so this is order 10 or so. And this number of e-folds doesn't ruin, this doesn't compete with the standard inflation, it's just the late field of inflation. And it doesn't ruin the original density perturbation zone from inflation, but it's good enough to dilute this model. So that's the best solution we have at the moment, I think. I'm just learning this because I didn't know about this thermal inflation. And it's something that we are interested to pursue, especially to see that in string theory which fields can play the role of sigma. And actually we have some candidates, for instance, the Hagen moduli or Ring moduli. I'll wait for us to finish. So the nice thing is that if this is solved, then this field may play a role. Why? Because it's a field that has a mass of 1 MeV and decays very late. And there has been people considering in the last few years this 511 GeV line that we have seen in the center of the galaxy. And that's precisely if you have a field or the mass MeV, because then this will contribute to dark matter. So if you have a field like this, it's the case can produce this line. And actually people have considered this possibility, and I know there are other candidates for dark matter that people have been studying. I think Maxim has been working on that with other people. In this case, I think it's a very natural candidate that has the right mass to give you that line. But you have to see something which is not trivial, is that the field has to decay mostly on E plus E minus rather than photons themselves. So this 511 keV comes from E plus E minus. And here we have the reason why, because this decay is further suppressed by this factor of order 10. So this field, if it's kinematically allowed, it will prefer to decay in E plus E minus than in photons. That's something that people have to put in by hand in the people who have proposed this in the past. And this comes out very naturally here. And also, that leads us to the prediction, because then they have to see, if they get to enough precision, if they see this line, the 511, they should also see the monochromatic line coming from the decay to photons, because this number is not too big, it's just for something of order 30. And the scales, all the scales have been fixed by the soft breaking scales. So in that sense, we cannot play that much. It's actually, we tested that, because we found all these numbers here, all the coefficients precisely for this model I told you, the two model, and it's on the verge being ruled out because of the bounds. There is a you fix the abundance of dark matter. I mean, what is the contribution of this guy to dark matter? It has to be 10 to the minus 3. And with that, you should have seen this line in that model up to orders, factors of order one. Thank you, Chris.
About this thermal
inflation, but here, yeah. Good, very good. I'm learning, so I'm going to learn.
Actually, I have a paper realizing thermal inflation in string theory.
Oh.
Actually, it's very easy. You have stackable brakes.
Yes.
If you manage to stabilize them at some distance,
yes, that's precise. So you have the size of the brake. I think the masses are the soft turns, it has, and the surprising the string scale, so it's lower. I think it's very natural. That's very good. I look forward to see your paper.
Right. The second comment is that, I mean, you, thermal or not, you just need some brake period of inflation, right?
Exactly. Some blade inflation, yes. This is the most natural one I have found. Just imposing blade inflation, I think I find it very good.
You can also have locked inflation of the brain, and that's also very great. So that's
kind of possibility. Oh, I should talk about that. I will do it for the later one. Okay, we can talk. Guy, you had a question?
No, you asked my question.
Oh.
Yes, sorry.
Okay.
At the end, you talked about the photon being used here.
Yes.
What energy scale is it, and how does it relate to the Bible and the
E-Pulse lines? Yes, so we had to study the mass is NeV. So then the monochromatic line will be the half of that, the energy of half of that will give you the photon. And so it will be about the depending on the, because the mass, you say 1 MeV, but it can be 3 MeV, it can be 1/2 of MeV. If it is actually, if it is less than 1 MeV, we only have this channel to decay. And so then we won't get the 511. So this will be a prediction from this model that you should have this background of photons. But so we compare with the experimental bounds, because you should have seen the peak. And that's what puts the constraint that the abundance of this chi has to be less of order 10 to the minus 3. So it cannot be all dark matter. So it has to be only a percentage of background.
But
it's a monochromatic one. It's a monochromatic light. We also compare with a diffuse background, just not pass the just, but that puts some bound. But the data from the galactic photons, that's the one that was the strongest one. Okay.
So in this model, the inflation model over here with the flat thing.
Yes.
Does that take into account? Does that flatness remain robust against the corrections that Gabe was talking about?
Exactly. That's the question. I don't know. That's the thing. That's precisely the point. You know, that all these things, you say, why is it that perturbative corrections are so important here? They are important because the tree-level potential is flat. It's a no-scale model, so it's completely flat. So then the next non-trivial thing is that the leading order perturbative one. Now we have a case where that corrections give you something flat, which is the flatness of the. So you have to worry about what the corrections will give you. And then, of course, we have been, I don't have anything more to say, but I said we have to see which cases they will ruin and which cases they will not. So that's something that we're thinking about.
One here, and then last one here, and then
you might have said this, but what's the LSP candidate?
That's this. Here I have been discussing only one part of the story, because we're concentrating on the moduli part. I told you that the standard model will be in one D7 brain, but I didn't tell you the details of the standard model. So for that, there are constructions where you can put several D7 brains with magnetic fields and so on, and then that's a model-dependent thing. And so I'm assuming here that we will get some LSP if we have our symmetry or something that will give you that, our paradigm, sorry. But that's something, there is a question separated from here. You can have that plus anything else that would be local.
Is that something looking at in the
rest of the I think it's very interesting. But I think coming into the model building, I have been going in and out because it's a complicated business. And now I think the best models at the moment in this direction are coming from Hermann Berlin, the explorators. They're doing some nice constructions there. And so that I think is promising. But yes, it's open.
I'm lost.
There's a rather general question. Still a lot of talk in the past year, about the landscape, curious of landscapes. Mm-hmm. This is a very rich structure.
Yes.
So it's not surprising that we find particles that we put up there. And also, you can get some kind of equation of top.
That's excellent.
So the question is, how would you How did you test these?
Well, I tell you, there are some tests here where you have predictions, and they don't come out right, but you can rule out our models. You can put something LEC that you can rule out. Of course, you will not test the string theory. You will be testing classes of string models in this regard. But that's a big step. I think we are scientists, that's I think what we use a little bit. Try to put the string theory to test. I would love to, but we don't have experience to the Planck scale, so we can't do it at once. But this, I think, is what a normal scientist can do. Just be less ambitious, put to test what you do, and then if it doesn't work, rule it out.
Okay, then we thank Fernando again.